So we're continuing our study of Sefer Melachim Aleph. We are up to Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Yud Aleph, and we kind of left off right in the middle of a story and right in the middle of a prophecy. The story was the wife of Yeravam, so we're in the kingdom of the north, the northern kingdom. The first king of the north of the 10 tribes was Yeravam from the tribe of Ephraim. And one of his children, as we're going to see based on the Medrash, the Pasuk called him a nar. The Medrash is going to say some of his actions actually that were good. Definitely not something that a child could pull off. Even though the Pasuk is going to also refer to the nar as a yeled, so it kind of confuses us. But again, in Tanakh we can see these phrases describing children of different ages. So there's a child of Yeravam that is ill, and Yeravam wants to find out the truth about what's going to happen to the child, and Yeravam only recognizes that only a real Navi, namely Achia, who's in Shiloh, the same Navi who told him that he would become king, so he's available, he's reliable for prophecy. He sends his wife on a secret mission. He doesn't want anyone to know. She comes there, and she walks into what she never thought she was walking into, which is receiving a prophecy that's going to be her job to deliver back to Yeravam, basically talking about the downfall of Yeravam himself and his entire dynasty, and perhaps even more. So we're picking up Pasuk Yud Aleph. This is still Achia talking to Mrs. Yeravam, talking to the queen. Hames li Yeravam be'ir, yochlu aklavim. That those from the family of Yeravam who pass away and die in the city, yochlu aklavim, their remains will be eaten by dogs. Vames basada yochlu of vashamayim, and those that die in the field will be eaten by birds, by vultures, by birds of the sky, of the heaven. Ki Hashem diber, for Hashem has spoken. That this is considered the last. Probably we should have pushed one more pasuk, but we were a little over time last time. One or two more pasukim. This was, after hearing that everything's going to, all these terrible things are going to happen, and that Hashem is going to basically cut down the entire dynasty. So almost like the last step is that they won't even be given the ability for a Jewish burial. They won't even be given kvura, that those who die in the city will, right, klovim, dogs are more found in the city, so they'll be able to. They would kind of devour the corpse, and those that die in the field, so that's where there are birds, and that's where they're. So, but it's kind of an ultimate level of punishment that you're not even given the ability for kvura. There's an aspect of kvura that acts as a kapara, that acts as a forgiveness, so they wouldn't even be given that. And then he closes off, Achia closes off by telling, right, the whole reason why she came was to find out what was going to happen to the Nar, to her son. So the Pasuk says in Pasuk Yud Beis, V'at kumi l'chila v'seich, you should get up and go to your house. Bevo raglayecha ira umeis hayalid. When you get into the city, almost sounds like before you even arrive at the house, umeis hayalid, the child will die. And here, again, we saw it the first time. It was described as a ben. His name was Avia ben Yeravam. So first time he was, and not really described as ben. We just hear him as a person. Then he's described as a nar, and here lastly he's described as a yeled. Now he goes on to say about this occurrence in Pasuk Yud Gimel, v'saftu lo kol Yisrael. All of Israel, which most likely is now a reference not to all of the 12 tribes, but Kol Yisrael is a reference to the 10 tribes, that the northern kingdom, v'saftu lo Kol Yisrael, all of Yisrael will eulogize him. The kavur oso, and they will bury him, and in our minds we're already thinking that burial, we just got through saying that no one's going to get buried. So this is unique, and the Pasuk spells it out. Kizel levado yavo li Yeravam el kavur. This alone, this member of Yeravam's household alone, will merit having kvura. Yan nimsabo davar tov, because there is found in him a davar tov, a good thing. El Hashem Elokei Yisrael, to Hashem the God of Israel, beveis Yeravam, among the household of Yeravam. There was a davar tov, and nowhere in Tanakh does it mention what this davar tov is. So all the Mefarshim on the page and others quote from Chazal that it was one of it was two actions, which is kind of combined. They're very similar. Is that we had already discussed that Yeravam's number one fear was that Jews were going to go to Jerusalem. They were going to go the three times of a year, Ola Regel. Worshipping in the Beis HaMikdash in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. If anything, it's a good thing. But it's being in Yerushalayim and either experiencing the fact that the only king that would be able to sit in the Beis HaMikdash would be the king from Malchus Yehuda, or just in general being exposed to Malchus Yehuda. Maybe in the back of his mind, you know, the grass is always greener. When they were with Rechavam and Rechavam made high taxes, well, they wanted out. But now maybe they'll say, oh, maybe this king could be better. And they would, by going to Yerushalayim and being exposed to the Malchus Yehuda, kind of on their home turf, it would turn them. They would want to end the Malchus Yisrael. And so Yeravam placed these, not only did he make new religious centers in Beis El and Dan, but he placed guards. So Rashi and others quote from Chazal that this child, as a teenager, as a nar, went ahead and number one, he was asked to be one of the officials on the road blocking people. He didn't do that, and he went himself. And the other thing is that he allowed for others, again, doesn't appear like it's large numbers. We have no hint that it was something major. But he himself, there was some schus, there was some merit. The merit that he has, that's considered to be the davar tov, that allows him to have kvura, that allows him to be the only one from Yeravam's dynasty not to meet the horrific end after a horrific end of either, you know, dogs or birds and not having a proper kvura. So Achia continues talking. Pasuk Yudalid. Vehekim Hashem lo melech al Yisrael asher yachris espes Yeravam zehayom. And further, Hashem is going to establish lo, meaning kind of for himself, meaning Hashem makes the king's ideal for himself. So Hashem's going to establish a king over Yisrael, over the northern kingdom. Asher Yachris is based Yeravam, that is going to, part of their ascension to the throne, is going to be cutting off the dynasty of Yeravam. We know there are many ways that governments can transition power, but back in the, I don't know, good old days of monarchy, it doesn't seem to be so good. Today's election day in certain places, it was just a powerful thing to have that concept. So in order to get a new king, you have to, many times, if it's going to be a new dynasty, there's going to have to be assassinations, there's going to have to be a rebellion, there's going to have to be a total change. And so that's going to be the mandate for whoever this is going to be. We'll see soon who that's, not like in this parak, but soon, relatively, who that's going to be. Zehayom, it'll happen on this day, not now, but talking about the future. And then there's a shift in the pasuk. The pasuk concludes, umeh gam ata. Umeh gam ata. Now, the art scroll translates it, but what does this matter now? You have a different translation.
Who will be born from now on?
Say again?
Who will be born from now on?
Umeh gam ata. It sounds like this phrase is saying, whatever we were talking about, is going to fail in comparison to what we're about to talk about. Because here, from Pasuk Yudalet into Pasuk Tazvav, there's a shift. And for the very first time, but unfortunately not the last time, instead of addressing one of the kings of the northern kingdom, we shift and we discuss the northern kingdom itself. The Jews of the northern kingdom, the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom. In Pasuk Tazvav, Achia again is talking to this, you know, at this point I think we could say this poor Mrs. Yeravam. This is way more than she ever bargained for. And she's already heard. She's kind of already heard the reason why she came. She heard what's going to happen to the Nar, and yet she still has to sit there and kind of listen. I guess you don't get up when you're hearing this. Pasuk Tesvav, Vihika Hashem es Yisrael. Hashem is going to strike Yisrael, meaning the nation of Israel in the northern kingdom. Kasher Yanud HaKaneh B'mayim, just like a kaneh, just like a reed, yanud is kind of moved by mayim in the water. And the result is also going to be, in addition to being, right, in terms of vihika, in terms of being struck, so that could be a plague, that could be a war, that could be losing soldiers in an army. That's kind of one level of punishment. But it shifts. Vinatash means that they'll be uprooted. Right, that's the way the Mitzvah Tzion defines the word akira, to literally be picked up. That they'll be picked up, may al ha'adama ha'tova, from on this good earth, this good land, hazos asher nasan la'vaseim, that was given to their forefathers, v'zeiram may evel anar. V'zeiram, Mitzvah Tzion defines as yifazreim, they'll be scattered, but there's definitely some level of like, kind of almost, not just a scattering that involves like being thrown in the wind. Like the word, we know it from the Malachos of Shabbos. We were talking in class in school. We were talking about doing tshuva. Someone asked, like, you know, if someone violated many of the Malachos of Shabbos, would they have to do tshuva on each one? Could they just do tshuva saying I broke Shabbos? So we were trying to say someone was so talented that they did every malacha. It happens to be even like the biggest rasha. I said probably they're not doing winnowing. Right? When was the last time someone winnowed? But the Hebrew word for winnowing is zoreh. Zoreh means to take the wheat and the chaff, throw it up, and let the wind scatter. That zoreh, that's the language of zeram. That they'll be scattered, me'ever lanar, on the other side of the river. Mefarshim debate which river it is, but it definitely, this depicts what unfortunately actually happens a few hundred years from now, in terms of when the 10 tribes were exiled. When the king of Ashur, Sancheriv, when he exiles the 10 tribes, it's me'ever lanar. It is on the other side of various rivers. And so this is the first time that they hear a prophecy. This is not the first time that we hear in the Torah that the result of going against the ways of Hashem and following the ways of the land of Canaan will result in being removed from the land. The Psukim and Sefer Vayikra already tell us that. They tell us that we will, if we don't follow, that it uses language, you know, a little gross, that the land will spit you out. Mm-hmm. That you cannot, there's something idea that this Hadama Hatova, this good earth of Eretz, the good land of Eretz Yisrael, it has to have proper spiritual behavior. Now, based on the fact that we're hearing about this prophecy now, and the punishment doesn't happen for another 200 years, there's clearly an element of Erech HaPayim, of God taking a very long time to carry through. And then the pasuk ends by saying exactly why Klal Yisrael would be deserving of this. Ya'an asher osu es asherehem, because they made the Asherah trees, which are trees that are worshipped, Avodah Zarah, machisem es Hashem, angering Hashem. And this is just, Pasuk Tazayin is kind of a continuation of the prophecy, again, directed at Klal Yisrael. Vayiten es Yisrael, Hashem will give over Yisrael, give the control over Yisrael, over, meaning to no longer be, right? Sometimes the way Chazal describe that when we have Hashem's protection, when the nation of Israel have Hashem's protection, so then enemies can't come in. All Hashem has to do is remove his protection, and when he removes his protection, so then the enemies that would have been there anyway now can go ahead and have their way. So Vayiten Yisrael, Hashem will give them over. Biglal chatos yiravam asher chatav asher hechti yisrael. Biglal here means like on account of, the Mitzvah Tzion says, because of the sins of Yeravam that he himself sinned, v'asher hechti yisrael, and that he caused Klal Yisrael to sin. That's still, and kind of, that, this is the last word of the prophecy. So it's almost like we need to, even though we've gone on to a different subject than Yeravam and his household, in order for us to kind of close it, we need Yeravam and his household to be mentioned again, and that all of Klal Yisrael, on the one hand, they make their decisions for themselves, but on the other hand, it does come back to Yeravam. This is the end of the prophecy. A question that I'm not going to be able to have an answer to is that we know that she was supposed to go back home, and she's supposed to tell her Imagine, she's supposed to tell Yeravam, the king, everything that she heard, which on the one hand is going to be, on the one hand, based on the prophecy, she's actually not going to have to tell him what's going to happen to the Nar, because that's going to be, unfortunately, dealt with. She is going to have to tell him about what's going to happen to him as a person and his household as a dynasty. The question remains, this last part of the prophecy sounds like the most, I would imagine, the most important person to hear this prophecy, this sounds like it should have been delivered to the people, to the masses, that, hey, you better fix your ways because this is coming down the pike. But we don't find that. We don't find that she ever, meaning it doesn't talk about, doesn't necessarily say explicitly that she's told over all the matters to her husband. We have to just, I think we can all say that she most likely did that and envision that she did that. In terms of the delivering the message to Klal Yisrael, so maybe the one thing you could say is that this was, even though the topic of this Nevuah was about Klal Yisrael, it was still supposed to make an impact upon Yeravam. That maybe, you know, it's hard to say that Yeravam shouldn't be moved by hearing that he's going to have a downfall, that his children are going to have a downfall. Maybe even those things won't shake him, but maybe if he hears that he's basically setting Klal Yisrael on the path, or at least the 10 tribes on a path, to be kicked out and eradicated from the land of Israel, maybe that would make an impact on him. So maybe, even though the subject is Klal Yisrael, the message is still supposed to be meant for Yeravam, and that Klal Yisrael, as we'll see, they're going to hear from other prophets about how they need to change their ways. So Pasuk Yud Zayin, she finishes hearing, Vatakam Eshes Yeravam, she gets up, Vatelech Vatavo Sirtzasa. She gets up and she came to Tirtza. He ba Besaf HaBayis, she came to the threshold of the house, Vahanar Meis, and the Nar passed away. The Sirtza is a city that apparently the Nar is there. Sirtza could have been a prominent city, and maybe Yeravam was also there now, and he kind of shifted. We kind of saw him set up camp in Shechem, but now he's in Sirtza. The Nar was in Sirtza, and that doesn't necessarily have significance. The article footnotes say that we haven't really been able to. They don't know where the where ancient Sirtza is. I don't know if anyone's ever gone on a tour and they told them where Sirtza is. It might not stand out, but if you did, one of two things. Either your tour guide is really, really good, or he's making it up. So whatever, you know, and chances are, all they have to do is hold the Tanakh like this, and you think like they know everything. Like, oh, but there, this happened. You can't, okay, probably it did. Who knows? So she gets up. So Mefarshim debate, didn't the prophecy say that when she comes into the city that the Nar is going to pass away? And here it says, oh, she came to the threshold. So the Radak says that maybe there was some type of process where she stepped into the city and the death process started, but then when she stepped into the household, it finished. The Metzudas David comes, I think it sounds creative in the sense that he's envisioning perhaps the house was at the edge of the city, and she actually was able to enter the house as she entered the city. And so the way the Navi said it, which was, Bivoro Raglaya Chaira, actually can match up to Ba'a Besaf HaBayis. And other Mefarshim point out that it must be that she understood that it wasn't like if she stays away from the city, if she just, you know, runs away and goes to Yerushalayim, then nothing else is going, you know, nothing bad is going to happen. It must mean that it was just kind of, either it's, you know, some type of image for her to imagine, or, staying away was not going to save the life. Pasuk Yud Ches.
What about if Rabban did like tshuva? That nothing was going to save the boy.
We don't know that. We don't know that because Yeravam never does tshuva, and whenever we definitely establish in other places that every time there's a nevuah ra, even with a sign, let's say, but tshuva can get rid of a nevuah ra. When there's a nevuah letov, it has to happen, and if not, the Navi's a Navi Sheker. If there's a Nevuah Ra and there's Tshuva, and we haven't, once in a while we've had phrases like it was almost like, it sounds like it's too late for Tshuva. There's no indication that it was too late for tshuva, both on Klal Yisrael's part and Yeravam's part. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And Pasuk Yud Ches, as the Navi had said, Vayikberu also, they were able to bury him, which we know is unique, but they don't. Mm-hmm. Because they haven't heard, no one's heard the prophecy except for her. Maybe she told Yeravam, but the northern kingdom and even Yeravam's dynasty themselves don't know it, that this is going to be unique in the sense that someone from Yeravam's family is given the opportunity to have kfura. Vayisperu lo kol Yisrael, and like the Navi said, that they eulogize him, kol Yisrael, that there's some type of national mourning, which again could be, you know, it makes sense. There's a prince that passes away. Kidvar Hashem asher diber, like the word that Hashem spoke, biyad avdo Achiyahu anavi, through the hands of his servant Achiyahu anavi. It's something to note. The art scroll note counts it, that I didn't check this in like Bar Ilan, so this would be a little bit of a hard check to see that the art scroll note says that there were 10 individuals in Tanakh who are called Eved Hashem. So we're all familiar with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is called Eved Hashem, and that there are so 10 is not a lot when you think about all of Tanakh, a lot of individuals. So to be called Eved Hashem, or Avdo, meaning in the context of Hashem, is significant. It would be a hard thing to search on one of the search programs like Bar Ilan, because you'd have to search if it says Eved, if it says Avdo, if it says Ha Eved. So if anyone wants a homework assignment, you could try to find number 11, and then you could write to Art Scroll and say that there are 11 people. But if not, we'll just take it. And we already know, we had known that Achia was prominent. Again, Achia is either an individual who was a miraculous individual, either he was from those who left Mitzrayim and somehow he's still on the scene, or he's a Navi living now, and very important in terms of the Shalshalis, in terms of the transmission, not just of Nevuah, but of Torah, from David and Shlomo down to the next generation. Achia plays an important role. So like we're going to see the following formulation of a pasuk many times over throughout Sefer Melachim, where we basically cut short the kingdom of a king. We heard about Yeravam, we actually heard very little about Yeravam. We hear about him in the beginning, we hear about him setting up the base of Avodah Zarah and that he's serving there, we hear about his interaction with the Ish Elokim, when the Mizbeach split in half and he had his hand paralyzed, and he hears about how these false Kohanim are going to be met, they're going to eventually get their punishment. We hear about the fact that his child gets sick, and now we hear a lot about what happened with his wife in terms of the Nevuah, and that's it. Pasuk Yud Tes, the Yeser Divrei Yeravam, the other rest of the matters of Yeravam, Asher Nelcham, that he fought, meaning wars that he fought, Vasher Malach, and that which he ruled, Hinam Ksuvim Al Sefer Divrei HaYamim LeMalchei Yisrael, behold, they are written in the Book of Chronicles for the kings of Israel, which is a book that we don't have. It's not a reference to our Divrei HaYamim that's part of Ksuvim, that's part of our Tanakh. First and foremost, because Divrei HaYamim only talks about the southern kingdom. We're going to shift in two psukim, we're going to go back to the southern kingdom and the kingdom of Yehuda, and we're going to need to either take out our sheet from Divrei HaYamim, or I have the ones that we had, and if not, you'll look on with someone. But so that doesn't talk about Malchus, so it can't be talked. But we're going to even see that there was a Divrei HaYamim L'Malchus Yehuda. Kings or monarchies kept other volumes of chronicles of all their appointments and things that happened. It existed, but it didn't make it through. So in the northern kingdom, we can all understand why it didn't make it through. There's no northern kingdom. They're scattered. The tribes were exiled. They never return en masse. Whether or not they were able to escape with those books or not, but even in the Malchus Yehuda, we lose those king volumes, and it's really just the Tanakh. Again, I'm not an archaeologist. I imagine there are other things from these periods that we maybe have, but the Tanakh is not necessarily going to be kept in the palace. The books of, of Tanakh are going to be kept amongst the scholars, amongst, you have to imagine, it's kept amongst the prophets and the Talmidei Chachamim. We know that at the end of Malchus, at the end of the time period of the first Beis HaMikdash, the 10 tribes are already exiled. We read about this in Megillas Esther, that there was a time, and then we read again about in Malachim, or reverse that, but they were 11 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was the first wave of Galus. It was, and very prominent individuals were exiled from Yerushalayim, not in the state of Churban. When you're not in the state of Churban, so we know this, unfortunately, from Jewish history, when Jews have to totally uproot themselves, but they could do it in peace, they could take a lot more of the history of artifacts, of Svarim, of the life of old with them. When there's turmoil, when there's Churban, so then, you know, sometimes you're just taking the shirt off your back. So it could be the second wave of Jews that come with the destruction of the actual first Beis HaMikdash come to Babel, they're probably carrying a lot less in terms of the ability to transport. But the Tanakh is saved, but these books of Divrei Hayamim for the kings are totally lost, and they probably would be very fascinating. You know, should we be able to find them? So the rest of what you have to imagine, he was king, as we're about to see, Pasuk Chaf. Vayamim asher malach yeravam esrim ushtaim shana. He was king for 22 years. So you just have to imagine that many things happened in those 22 years. Vayishkav imavosav. He lay with his forefathers. Means he died. Vayimloch Nadav bino tachtav. His son Nadav reigned in his place. And so 22 years he's king. And we basically heard very little about him being actually king. Mm-hmm. Then the truth is, if you think about the 40 years of Shlomo being king, we don't hear a lot about every year of his being king. We have to kind of remember a little bit why Sefer Malachim. Sefer Malachim is not written at the time that they're being kings. Sefer Malachim is written hundreds of years later by Yirmiyahu Anavi, and trying to put together the story of the destruction of the land of Israel, the story of Churban Bayis Rishon, from the glorious beginning to its unfortunate, you know, kind of down. And so we don't necessarily have to know the nitty-gritty details. But if he's king for 22 years, he spans three kings of Malchus Yehuda. Three southern kings are going to become king during his time. So what happens is, and this is where it's going to get a little confusing. We keep shifting. Here we're even, you know, you would almost ask the question on whoever was the individuals. You know, maybe it was the Vulgate in the 3rd, 4th century when they translated the Tanakh into Latin. Who made these prakim? Like, wouldn't have this been a good place to end the perek? You have told the story of Yeravam, and now you're shifting to the story of Rechavam in the south. That to me, that sounds like a great chapter, but we don't even get that. And so we're going to be shifting back and forward. Mm-hmm. But what is going to, I think, we'll see if we prove this wrong, I don't think we will, that we're going to stay true to the years. Meaning we took, Yeravam became king, and it's king for 22 years. So now we're going to shift and go to the Malchus Yehuda, who was the king during those 22 years. And if, let's say, we get to the third king, who only the beginning of his time will be with, when Yeravam was still king in the north, we'll finish that third king story, and then we'll shift back to the Malchus Yisrael and kind of go like that. And if it's confusing, I'm sorry, but we'll try our best to keep it that we know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we're shifting back to the southern kingdom. Huh. And even though we maybe heard that he became king, it's almost like we're treating it again. So, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Urechavim ben Shlomo malach b'Yehuda. Rechavim, the son of Shlomo, ruled in Yehuda. Ben arba'im v'achas shana Rechavim b'malcho. Rechavim was 41 years old when he began. Ushva esrei shana malach b'Yerushalayim. And for 17 years, he ruled in Yerushalayim. Ha'ir asher bachar Hashem, the city that God chose, lasum Shemo Sham, to place his name there, Mikol Shifta Yisrael, from all the tribes of Israel. You could ask a question why it's necessary to say that here. I mean, we all know about Yerushalayim. why is it necessary? Unless you some maybe to some degree to recall in some way, why was it that Rehavam got anything? Why is it that Rehavam got to rule over two of the tribes? Why is it that he got to rule over Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash? It had something to do with obviously, it had everything to do with God. But the fact God had chosen Yerushalayim, God had chosen this place, and it was almost, and we had kind of, in the prophecy that Ahiah had told to Yerovam initially about the kingdom being split, he had said that because of David and because Hashem's desire that only the Malchus of David should rule over Yerushalayim, that's why it's not going to happen during the time of the lifetime of Shlomo. The breakdown of the kingdom is only going to happen afterwards, and that's why Rehavam is going to be allowed to have two tribes and rule over Yerushalayim. So maybe that's that. I think the question is better than my answer of meaning Malach B'Yerushalayim. Of course. Why do we have to know? And then we're told, V'shem imo Na'ama Hamonis. The name of his mother was Na'ama. It's quite normal for us when we are introduced, particularly to the kings of Yehuda, that we're told who their mother is. We usually know who their father is because it's the previous king. And we know that kings had multiple wives. So we usually, it's not uncommon for us to identify the mother. We referenced this pasuk earlier when we were introduced to Rehavam. So his mother being Na'ama Hamonis, so Chazal, she has a not Jewish name. She's called Na'ama Hamonis. I'm not saying Na'ama is not Jewish, although maybe it's not. I think there are two Na'amas in Tanakh. Who's the other Na'ama?
Tuval Kayin's wife.
Tuval Kayin's wife?
His sister.
Who married?
Noach.
Noach's wife, excellent. So Noach's wife was Na'ama, so she wasn't Jewish, right? Mrs. Noach wasn't Jewish because Noach wasn't Jewish. First Jew is Avraham Avinu, and this is the second time that Na'ama. So, but Na'ama's a nice name. It's Noam, right? Anyone who's named Noam, so Na'ama is, I think, it's the equivalent. But she came from Ammon, so she converted, which is not surprising because that was a lot of Shlomo's wives, right? She is, right? In order for her to be the mother of Rehavam, she has to be married to Shlomo. And that...
Why couldn't Shlomo find Jewish wives?
So we dealt with that.
Oh, sorry.
No. And we didn't come up with... He probably had some, but we didn't come up...
It says not one. It says right in the...
We couldn't name one, but it didn't say that he didn't have one. I don't think so. You'll for homework, you'll find me that phrase. I don't know if that phrase existed in the text. You'll see.
Okay.
You'll go back. It is strange that the one who's chosen to be the king is someone that comes from foreign. But Chazal are kind of conflicted. There are multiple opinions in terms of was she righteous or was she not. Then on the one hand, Na'ama Hamunis, there's an approach to say that she was actually a righteous convert, and we go with that approach. And there are others that know it was her ways that ended up influencing Rehavam, because Rehavam takes it further. Rehavam seems to take things much further than Shlomo did in terms of what he allows the nation to do, or what he does himself, because we're going to see two versions of the story that we always have to balance. The version of the story that we have here in Sefer Melachim, and kind of side by side the version that we get in Divrei Hayamim. So in Melachim, which since it's our study, we definitely treat as more primary. So he becomes king.
Now converts are acceptable because they're kind of crummy.
His mother's from the Shlomo times.
Right.
When you say now, you would mean if, let's say, Rehavam himself decided to marry a convert.
Right.
So we're acting to see that he doesn't. Right. In Divrei Hayamim, it records who he marries. He actually keeps, stays in the tribe. But what you're saying in terms of how globally we would view converts, we pointed out how the Rambam and the Gemara really said that during the time of David and Shlomo, when things were going well for the Jews, so there was an idea not to accept converts, because the assumption is you're converting for the wrong reasons. You're converting because it happens to be good to be a Jew, as opposed to almost every other time period in Jewish history where objectively from certain standpoints it's not so easy or not so good. So then obviously if someone wants to come, you know, still we try to a little bit test that they're that they're very serious, but yeah, this would it wouldn't be applied to Na'ama, but it would apply to now, that now converts would be quote unquote accepted.
Do you think it's interesting that Na'ama and Amogi have the same letter? Like, do you think Na'ama is like a name or more of a generic
way of referring to an Amogi? I don't know.
Where was the other Na'ama from? What's the Amogi?
Well, the other Na'ama is before Amun exists. It predates the flood. So, I mean, she survived the flood, but,
but they are same letters, same shoresh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is it Amun, like a descendant of?
Amun came, Moab? Amun and Moab
right.
came from Lot
from
his daughters. Right, so Lot and one daughter had Moab, and Lot and another daughter had Amun. So Pasuk of Beis, it sounds like, you know, for our purposes, it sounds like it doesn't take much time. Vayas Yehuda hara b'enei Hashem. That unfortunately now, and this is an unfortunate story that we have running throughout Sefer Malachim, that it wasn't just the northern kingdom, but the southern kingdom as well, again, to different degrees and different extents, but that Yehuda, so I think it's important to note, we're not picking, in terms of the pasuk itself, we're not picking on Rechavam. It says Vayas Yehuda. That means the nation. And Yehuda here refers to Yehuda and Binyamin, the two tribes together. The same way Yisrael refers to 10 tribes, Yehuda refers to two, maybe you want to call it 2.5 or 2-3 because of all the Kohanim and Leviim. Vayas Yehuda hara b'enei Hashem. Yehuda does ra in the eyes of Hashem. And therefore, Vayikanuoso. It angers Hashem. There's a idea of like provoking Hashem. It angers him to the extent that the Torah said that the Navi says, Mikol Asher Asu Avosam, more than anything that their forefathers did, Bechatosam Asher Chatu, in the sins that they did. Meaning, and here, yeah, it's interesting because we're talking about two tribes doing something wrong. And yet we're reflecting that on previous history. But in previous history, it wasn't just those two tribes. In previous history, it was the whole nation. Unless there's just some type of, you know, like microscope being placed on these. And there, it doesn't mention their tribe. It talks about they did worse, Mikol Asher Asu Avosam, anything that their forefather, anything that their particular ancestors. So during the time period of the Shoftim, what's happening now is worse than what happened in Yehuda, right? But if you carry that through, if you think about what happened in the time period of the Shoftim, there were a bunch of stuff, we're talking about like Tanakh. There were episodes that took place that were quite horrific, and actions that took place, and war, civil wars, and not treating each other properly. And yet the Navi is saying this is worse. It angered Hashem. What the southern kingdom was doing now had angered Hashem. Mikol Asher Asu Avosam B'chatosam Asher Chatu, that they sinned, and we start hearing some of the details in Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vayivnu Gam Heim Alahem Banos Bamos Umatzevos VaAsherim, which is sounds like they all go in order, but they're actually worse and worse as you go on. Vayivnu Gam Heima, they also built Gam Heima, they also built. Is picking up on, you know, these things were happening in the Malchus Yisrael. It was happening in the northern kingdom with Yeravam. But now Gam Hema, also they, meaning also those in the southern kingdom are doing the same thing. They're building Bamos, which is a private Mizbeach, which a private Mizbeach alone is only a certain level of a crime. A private Mizbeach can mean you're still going to bring the Karban to God, to Hashem. You just don't want to schlep to Beis HaMikdash. Now it's a violation of the Torah, and it's quite disrespectful to Beis HaMikdash for this to happen. Perhaps, but from there it goes to Matzevos. Matzevos are pillars that are Avodah Zarah based, and Asherim are definitely the trees that are Avodah Zarah based. And we hear it, it's like it's spread like wildfire. I'll call Giva Gavoa on every kind of hill, every hill, every high hill. V'tachas kol Eitzer Anan, and underneath every Eitzer Anan is a very healthy tree. The Mitzvah Sion calls it moist, and here it says, Arts Girl says, leafy. What do you got?
Green.
Fresh, a vibrant tree. I think there may be some hint at, if you recall, when Shlomo was in the height of his monarchy, and Klal Yisrael was at that peak of prosperity, so we had some descriptions in the Navi about like everyone sitting under their tree, and everyone like right. We put a lot of emphasis on even like how the nature is beautiful. Everyone had so much abundance, there was so much growth. We said that's maybe why people didn't even complain. There may have been high taxes then, but no one complained because if you take 25%, but I have a lot, so you know, almost like I don't even notice it. So maybe there's a, and now we've gone to such an, like we've come to such a downfall that now there's a bama or a matzeva or an asherah tree tachas kol etzran and underneath under all these, which at this point sounds like it almost sounds like the southern kingdom is a mirror image of the northern kingdom, and Pasach Chavdalet takes it to maybe even a worse level. Pasuk Chaf Dalet says, "V'gam kadesh hoysa ba'aretz." There was immorality, sexual immorality in the land. The Mitzvah Sion translates kadesh as ni'uf, which is usually understood sometimes understood as adultery. Mitzvah Sion seems to prove it from a pasuk. Which actually just refers to just immorality, because he goes back to Sefer Bereishis when Yehuda had met up with Tamar, not knowing that it was Tamar, and now right, he just thinks that she's a zona, thinks that she's a prostitute on the road, and he didn't have payment, so he said he gave her collateral, and the next day he sent his friend with a gediaism with goats as monetary payment, but they couldn't find her. And so the question they asked the question, Mitzvah Sion quotes the question, Aye HaKdesha, where is the Kdesha? A little curious why he has to go to the story with Yehuda and Tamar. The Torah itself has prohibitions that there shouldn't be a Kdesha or a Kadesh. There shouldn't be a female prostitute or a male prostitute in the land of Israel. And here we have it, kind of the exact unfortunate occurrence, V'gam Kadesh Haya Ba'aretz, that there was this promiscuity in the land.
It's so interesting, though. It's the same letters as Kadosh.
So they're definitely... There's some play on... Meaning it's like a play on the word. Kind of a...
Take something holy and turn it into...
Profane.
Opposite.
Right. I think there's some other examples not coming to mind. It's unfortunate, but we didn't see this being mentioned in the Northern Kingdom. And one would expect that you would think that whatever was going on in the Northern Kingdom was worse. But you could say either this was going on, but it wasn't discussed, or that at this point, maybe the Southern Kingdom was actually worse.
Was the Southern Kingdom had the base of Migdash there, you would think
that would have an impact.
Yeah, have some kind of spiritual uplifting for them, and it's creating just the opposite.
Right. Some people living today think, if we would only have a Navi, if we would only have a base of Migdash, then I'd be religious. You know, I don't know. These people were...
It didn't help them, I mean.
It did not help them.
It was also in the Northern Kingdom, and we just don't hear about it because it wasn't significant. But it's so significant here.
Right, right. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
Is Rehoboam also, like, is he evil as a king, or he just can't control his people?
So we're going to see him described a little bit more in Divrei Yamim. He's taken to task for not... for allowing all this to happen under his guard, under his watch.
But he's not specifically acting that way.
It hasn't been described as such yet. So that's happening. And then, right, so Vigam Kadesh Haya Ba'aretz. Asu kechol hatovos hatoavos hagoyim asher horish Hashem mipnei bnei Yisrael. They were doing all of the abominations of the nations that Hashem had gotten rid of from before the children of Israel. That all of the ways that the Torah describes the land of Canaan before, right? Always we have all these psukim about you shouldn't follow in the ways of Mitzrayim and the ways of Canaan, maybe before they get into the land, and now it's back. You know, it's almost like it goes back to tohu vavohu. It's back to like nothingness. There's no morality towards Hashem, which is an aspect of, you know, proper morals in terms of bein adam lemakom. And the idea of promiscuity is that there was no level of morals even amongst people themselves. So we hear the following in pasuk chaf hey. Vayhi bashana hachamishas lamelech Rechavam. It was in the fifth year of Rechavam being king, which is striking in that that means everything that we read about before then happened before that. So within 5 years of Shlomo not being king, you know, within 45 years of David not being king, this is the unfortunate reality. So it was in the fifth year of his being king. Allah Shishak Melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim. Shishak, who we heard about before, the king of Mitzrayim, he rose up against Yerushalayim, meaning with an army. We had heard of Shishak that when Shlomo was still king, and Yeravam was working in Shlomo's palace, and he protested something that Shlomo did. So Shlomo wanted to get Yeravam, and Yeravam ran away to Shishak in Mitzrayim, and he housed them there. When we mentioned Shishak there, we saw that the Mefarshim were debating, is this Shlomo's father-in-law, right? Because Shlomo had married Bas Paro, or is this a new king? Here Rashi tells us that his name was not actually Shishak. Rashi calls him Paro Necho. V'nikra Shishak, he was called Shishak, al shahaya shokek umitaveh kol yomav l'kisei hashen shahaya l'shlomo chosno. That his whole life, he had a desire for the throne, the ivory throne that Shlomo had. He always wanted his son-in-law's throne, and now he's coming to take it. He sees that this the son is weak, Rechavam is weak. We also, in the back of our minds, realize that if he's about to attack Rechavam, he also has some, perhaps he has, and some of Farshim even say it, some level of alliance with Yeravam. He had housed Yeravam for all those years. Yeravam says, you know, it's time, now that Shlomo's dead, I'm going to go back home, and Yeravam becomes the king of the north soon afterwards. So you have to imagine that they have a good relationship, if not more. And now he's coming up against Yerushalayim. According to Rashi, quoting from Chazal, with that, you know, kind of the purpose was to get the throne. But we'll see. He takes a lot more. And there's always two sides to the story. Why Shishak is coming? Why is Shishak coming? So that's his own stuff. Why is he allowed to come? Why is he allowed to loot Jerusalem and the kingdom? So that's right. The way the psukim flow, that's in direct relationship to the fact that now is Vayas Yehuda Hara Bnei Hashem, that the Malchus Yehuda is doing wrong, and they're receiving some level of punishment, kind of immediately. You know, you could ask, you know, why is their punishment more immediate than the Northern Kingdom? You know, we're getting into things that are hard to explain. And that maybe some level, of, at least the way the punishment is going to be depicted to us, it seems that it's much more of an embarrassing punishment than a physical blow. At least the way the Sukkim here in Malachim describe it. And so that the kind of the embarrassment, so that's a punishment, but the goal would be for it to inspire the king and the nation to change their ways. So he rises up against Yerushalayim.
Why is it important that it not be Shishak, like the same guy? Like what brings that up?
That he's not Shlomo's father-in-law?
Yeah, like...
Well, I mean, I guess...
It's not the same Shishak that Yeravim went to, or is it? Like,
right, I mean, to say that it's... It could just be that, you know, maybe the years don't match. Maybe he's Shlomo's father-in-law, and Shlomo's already gone. Like,
right.
So it could be it's a new person named Shishak.
Old. Oh.
So it says he rises up against Yerushalayim, and what the Pesukim don't talk about is in order for you to get to Yerushalayim, you have to be successful with the army. Yerushalayim is not on the border. Yerushalayim is, you know, including like, you know, the Midbar Yehuda, it's like center. So and we had talked about, we had read Pesukim already, the few Pesukim about Rechavim that we read in Divrei Hayamim talked about the fact that Yeravim had set up fortified cities around the country. So presumably this Shishak had some success against those cities. And now he's at Yerushalayim, and he's successful even in Yerushalayim. We don't hear about like a counter fight. It just sounds like he's winning. Pasuk Chavav, Vayikach es Otsoros Beis Hashem. He took from the treasures, or if not all the treasures of the Beis Hamikdash, Vyes Otsoros Beis Hamelech, and the storehouses, the treasure houses of the king. Vyes Hakol Lakach, and everything he took. So obviously that bothers the Mefarshim. You know, what else is there? He took everything that was in this treasure house and everything in that one. So what's left? So Rashi says, Hakol, that refers to the throne. That's the Kisei, but the Rashi has the phrase, Hachaviv min Hakol, which based on what we had said earlier, that's what he was aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you transport such a thing, who knows? But maybe you even have to take it apart to put it back, but he takes it. Ves Hakol lakach, vayikach es kol magine hazav asher asa Shlomo. If you recall, at one time during Shlomo's malucha, his monarchy, he had so much gold, it was almost like he didn't know what to do with it. He made all these golden shields, mm-hmm. and we described how much weight each shield was, and they were kept in certain treasure houses in the house of Arzei Levonon that Shlomo had. So they took it all. Vayikach es kol magini hazav asher asa Shlomo, took all those. And that seems to be, in terms of Sefer Malachim, that seems to be the end of the embarrassment, the end of what Shishak did. And we're told almost, Pasuk of Zayin, it's a strange Pasuk, because we don't hear of any, you know, I wouldn't say positive. First of all, we don't hear of any reaction of Rechavam to what just happened. And the Pasuk presents us in Pasuk of Zion, Vayas HaMelech Rechavam Tachtam Magini Nechoshes. Like, we were missing these shields. Like, we really need these shields. So Rechavam made, in place of the golden shields, he made copper shields. V'hifked Al Yad Sarei Haratzim. He put these shields in the hands of those the officers of the foot soldiers, of the runners, Hashomer Pesach Beis Hamelech, that would guard the house of the king, Pesach Hafches, V'yemi Devo Hamelech Beis Hashem, when the king would come to the Beis Hamikdash, Yisum Haratzim, the runners would carry them, V'yishuvim Al Taharatzim, and then they would return them to where they were kept. It's a strange pasuk because. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be like the reaction. You just got so embarrassed. You have everything looted, and all you do is you replace some of the things that you lost with copper, and the copper shields. So there, I don't have a good approach to why it does that.
Mm-hmm.
The Radak says that the reason why we're hearing about shields, it doesn't make a difference what the material is. The Radak thinks that perhaps Rechavam is nervous of a rebellion from his own people. That after experiencing this embarrassing episode of being looted by a neighboring king and not being able to protect kind of the wealth of the previous generation. And again, it's only 5 years in. Mm-hmm. So he needed to at least immediately, not necessarily to replace what he had, but he needed extra protection in the city. He needed protection when he would come specifically to Beis HaMikdash. You have to imagine he's coming to Beis HaMikdash, definitely on Yom Tov when everyone else is there. And so there's more of a risk of him being a target because of the embarrassment that he let to go on. It's clear that there's just this contrast of losing gold and replacing it with copper. It's almost like you're admitting to defeat that your father gave you so much. And look, you'd almost say that Rechavam, again, a lot of it has to do with the fact that God said it was a prophecy and it was going to happen. That during the time of Rechavam, he was going to lose the monarchy. But truth is that we were never told when. And that was up to Rechavam. It could be Rechavam could have been a successful king for 10 years, and then it would happen. And it would happen maybe on his terms. But it was his decision going back. It was his decision to listen to the young advisors as opposed to the old advisors. Mm-hmm. And it was his decision to, you know, it was under his watch that the country fell apart in a spiritual way. And so, you know, Rechavam, he's like the ultimate loser. He takes everything that his father gave him. He got 12 tribes down to 2. He got all this wealth and all these storehouses full of, and now he's down. He had gold, and now he's down to copper. So what we're going to do, Bez Hashem, next time is see this story from the Divrei HaYamim perspective, and then continue back in Sefer Melachim.